Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk Extra, featuring an extended interview with the BBC Director General, Mark Thompson, conducted for The Observer by the paper's editor, John Mulholland. More than 80 years after it was founded, the BBC today finds itself at the heart of political, cultural, and increasingly commercial debates in Britain. It's accused of poisoning the public discourse with a misfiring edition of The Russell Brand Show, attacked by politicians over executives' pay, and hit by its rivals for being just too big. So, what is Mark Thompson's vision for the BBC? How will the corporation reach out to its critics? And will its unique method of funding, the licence fee, survive the digital age? To find out, John met Mark Thompson at BBC Television Centre in London.
Mark Thompson, I want to talk about the BBC and the place it has in the cultural debates that are increasingly taking place in Britain, with the BBC at its focus, with a seeming decline in respect for other national institutions, arguably politics, the church, other media, traditional family hierarchies. The BBC seems to take an even greater role as the place where national debates about tricky moral, political and ethical disputes are aired. And we saw that over the Gaza Peel, we saw that over the fallout from the Saxgate affair. Is the BBC equipped to play that role?
Well, firstly, you can't hope and expect to be a national broadcaster and to be in the middle of national life without also having to accept that when the nation is debating, maybe even fiercely debating, moral values, cultural values, or other big issues of the day, that you're not going to get absolutely drawn into that. I think the most important thing to say, though, is that, you know, at the BBC, we try very hard to stay true to our own values. For example, in news, that will be around impartiality, accuracy, fair-mindedness, but, you know, our own absolute values and our mission, but also to listen very carefully to the debate and to what the public say. I mean, we are there to serve the public. And I think the BBC is useful when it's a genuine platform where these issues can be debated. We also have to sometimes accept that what we do, the decisions we make, will themselves become part of that very lively debate.
And does the BBC have a role in stating very explicitly that there is not necessarily one accepted view of taste and decency? We all know that the incident that propelled Saxgate into the public view was beyond the pale, but there are many other issues that are perhaps more contentious. And does the BBC have a role in explaining to Britain that, in fact, there are different values, some of them acceptable to some groups of people, some to another, and that that difference is okay?
Well, I think you put it. I think absolutely correctly. I mean, there are, firstly, absolute boundaries, very widely accepted boundaries, and the BBC must stay within them. When we go beyond them, I think we did with the Russell Brand show, we have to take action, we should apologise and make sure it doesn't happen again if we can. So there are absolute boundaries, but beyond that, of course, you know, different members of the audience have different views about what should and shouldn't happen. Now, as far as we can, what we try and do is make sure, by where we put programming, by how we describe it when we're announcing it and so forth, we try to give people a very clear idea of what to expect. And I think most of the time we're very good at, if you like, directing the right audiences to the right kinds of programming they'd feel comfortable about, without being surprised or ambushed by something they wouldn't like. But there are occasions, I mean, Jerry Springer the Opera is an example, where sometimes we face a set piece debate, and on those occasions you have to make very clear judgments. And in the case of that program, we felt that although we knew that some members of the audience were unhappy with us broadcasting it, nonetheless we thought the public themselves had a right to decide whether to watch it or not, and we went ahead and broadcast.
Are there occasions when the BBC should, in your view, broadcast things even though they might well lead to complaints?
Yes, and in fact I think that if we were to adopt a policy of never broadcasting anything which would offend anyone, you know, we'd end up with a pretty sorry state of affairs in terms of what we broadcast. It would be virtually be the potter's wheel. What we shouldn't do is give, in a sense, unnecessary or unjustified offence. So I think if you do broadcast something which is potentially going to be offensive. It's very important you understand why you're broadcasting it, and that the reasons for broadcasting it outweigh the potential offence you might cause.
Do you think the way these affairs are played out by rival media organisations would appear to give the view that there is an acceptance of a mainstream view of taste and decency, but that in fact the reality on the ground is that there are many different complicated, nuanced views of different cultural values? And do you think there is an acceptance by the public that that is the case, but it's not necessarily reflected in the coverage of these affairs?
Well, my mother used to say to me when she was alive, you know, we don't think you should do that. And I'd say, who do you mean by we? And she'd say, people like me. All of us, and, you know, it's possibly even true of leader writers and editors of national newspapers, think that we represents maybe a slightly larger constituency than it actually does. However, we know from dispassionate conversations with the public, and some of it measured carefully over thousands of people, there are coherent views, and they differ. That older people are more likely to think there's too much swearing and too much sex on television. Young men under the age of 25 might think there's nothing like enough. So there are different emphases between different audience groups, but everyone has a right to be heard. And when I look at hostile opinions, whether they come in the form of emails from the public directly or newspapers who believe we've made a wrong judgment call, I don't dismiss them just because you could argue they're statistically a minority. You have to think carefully through what's going on there. And, you know, sometimes the views of a minority actually can prove to be justified. And I think, for example, that some of the extremely strong criticism of the BBC about the Russell Brand show was justified in that instance. We got it wrong that time.
Another area in which the BBC is at the very centre of national debate is over the future of media organisations and broadcasting organisations in particular. And as some of your commercial rivals become less wealthy because of structural changes in the organisation, the BBC appears to be becoming even more powerful and an even more significant player in the media world. Does that leave you feeling exposed?
Well, to state the obvious, we're not in absolute terms more powerful or bigger than we used to be. We're actually, in most ways you can measure, much smaller. We've got 7,000 or 8,000 less jobs in the BBC than we used to have. Our television audiences, although they've been fairly resilient, have been declining. We are physically, we're ultimately going to lose about a third of the BBC estate. We're becoming actually a smaller broadcaster, not a bigger one. But I accept that because some other traditional media players are facing, you know, either getting a lot smaller or potentially even facing oblivion, the BBC can, in relative terms, seem more influential and bigger. I think the key test for the BBC is whether that size and scale, which, you know, bluntly already delivers outstanding services to the public, I think that's not an issue really, but whether that size and scale can genuinely be put to the use of the entire industry or not. And as you know, John, we've announced a series of initiatives and partnerships precisely designed to show, we believe, that the BBC's technology, some of the things it can do by virtue of its scale and scope, could genuinely help sustain the rest of UK media. And I think one of the ways we'll be tested over the next few years is whether we can make good on that promise.
What kind of partnerships would you envisage?
We're looking at partnerships across every stage of the value chain of what we do, how we produce content, and whether or not we can find ways to share some of our technologies and approaches to digital production, multimedia digital production, with other players inside broadcasting and beyond. How we initially distribute that content to the public. We've talked about sharing technologies like the iPlayer. We have a fantastic new idea already in partnership with ITV and BT to create a simple way for people to get services like the iPlayer on their main television set, so that's in distribution. But we're also looking at commercial exploitation of content by UK media in the UK and around the world. So, for example, we're talking to Channel 4 about whether there's a partnership between Channel 4 and Worldwide to commercially exploit great British programming originally shown both on the BBC and Channel 4 in ways which we believe would work well for the public, but also potentially could create more revenue which Channel 4 could recycle and put into its own public service content.
There is concern, anxiety, and even anger amongst some of your commercial rivals about the huge scale of the BBC's footprint over a whole range of different media, from magazines to online, TV, radio. How do you answer those criticisms that you're simply becoming too powerful a player and knocking out the ability for other commercial rivals to grow and flourish?
Yes, I mean, to state the obvious, first of all, the BBC is pretty big. I mean, you know, the licence fees, you know, getting on for £3.5 billion of public money going into media every year. And, you know, to be honest, you know, I mean, we're not as big as we were in the 1920s, but commercial media should have recognised this is a market where there is a very, very big public intervention. As it happens, I think that the focus of the debate at the moment is less about the BBC's public services. I know there's been some argument at the margins around local media, around our educational offering, but actually, by and large, we think we've made the BBC's public services rather more distinct and different from the market, whether you're talking about BBC One or Radio One in recent years, and actually we get rather less criticism about those than we used to. The main area of debate at the moment is around Worldwide, the BBC's commercial arm. And I think the right thing to do is to say, I think the good thing is Worldwide is now an exciting going concern. It's one of the very few British media organisations with a genuine global strategy. We've just won a Queen's Award for Exports, and we are genuinely taking the BBC brand around the world and lots of British content and British talent with that brand. But I do accept, of course, that there's a debate around the edges about what are the boundaries of what the BBC should do commercially. I broadly think what we do is justified, but again, I've very happy to talk to and have been happy to talk to colleagues from other media organisations, both about those boundaries, but also about other ways in which we can take some of the benefits we've got and share them or combine with others to create an exploitation vehicle for British content, which is not just useful to the BBC, but to British media as a whole. In the UK, you know, iPlayer, public service iPlayer, could potentially, it's been a great success for us, it could potentially be a national asset. It could be an asset which could help commercially funded broadcasters monetize their content in new ways. Internationally, again, we'd like to find ways in which other media players in this country can reach global audiences in ways which make their business models work better. So all I would say is I absolutely appreciate that the Worldwide is absolutely the moment, the place where the shoe pinches for many commercial media players in the UK at the moment. All I would say to them is I think potentially, you know, we could look together at whether there are opportunities for cooperation in the commercial sphere as well.
And very specifically in terms of the debate that is taking place about the future funding of Channel 4 and how best to preserve public service broadcasting outside of the BBC, we know that the partnership with Worldwide is something that is ongoing and that is being negotiated.
Yeah.
You would prefer that to be the avenue you went down rather than finding funding for Channel 4 through top slicing the licence.
Well, and to state the yes, I would, and to state the obvious, we believe it's a way of creating new value. In other words, that it's a way of actually generating new revenue and new money. I mean, to state the obvious, if the problem in British television is that some hundreds of millions of pounds of revenue are falling out of the model and therefore are not available anymore or will not be available for commercial broadcasters to invest in great content, you know, sharing the licence fee more widely, quite apart from the fact that it breaks the link between the licence payer and the BBC and the accountability that goes with that, the other danger is you're just rearranging deck chairs, really, because you're not actually making any more money. You're just distributing the money, you know, the remaining money that exists more loosely. What's exciting about the Channel 4 Worldwide idea is it's potentially a way of generating new revenue which will go into public service broadcasting.
The BBC charter is due for renewal in 2016. Yeah. Do you think that the licence fee will exist in substantially the same form in 2016 as it does now?
I think that will depend ultimately on how successful we are in delivering services to the public and how successful we are in demonstrating how the licence fee benefits the sector as a whole. But I have to say, I do think it's very likely that not only will the BBC have its charter renewed and that the public will and the then government will want a BBC of scale and scope, but I also believe that the licence fee, as a way of funding outstanding content from the BBC and BBC services, a model which is turning out to be very effective in the digital age, in some ways more effective in the digital age than it was in the analog age, I believe that model will also survive. So yeah, I do think it's very likely that in 2016, 2017, you'll see a charter for a BBC of scale and scope funded, surprise, surprise, by a license fee.
And finally, if you were being sent off to Christy Young's desert island with a bit of a battered old iPlayer, which didn't have that much room on its hard disk, maybe five programmes, either from TV or radio. There's some leeway on that. You might even be allowed a series as part of those five.
Yeah, no, you'll get me. You really will get me pitchforked if I have to choose only five. Well, it's the comedies. I mean, the new BBC film In the Loop, I think, is fantastic, and I think that, you know, something by Amanda Iannucci, the thick of it probably will be part of the mix. And the comedies, frankly, throughout my lifetime in the BBC, in many ways, shows from the 1990s, some of the ones I commissioned myself, actually, The Royal Family. The League of Gentlemen will be there. Some of the great dramas, Boys from the Black Stuff, The Singing Detective, Our Friends in the North. See, I'm over five already. But of course, what I'd also want is daily access to the BBC's wonderful news and current affairs. So I'd need quite a lot of equipment on my desert island.
Mark Thompson, thank you very much.